Thank you for your patience. We'll now proceed with the regular agenda and review items for tonight's meeting. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Mr. Brady.
Council might want to follow along on this one. We're going to, on 6D is an item that's related to 7A. And so we will keep, this has to do with the massage establishment ordinance that we talked about the last council meeting that we introduced, correct? On 6, and actually what we introduced was 7A. After that meeting, as you recall, we had members from the massage establishment, some of the stakeholders came forward, were concerned about a few of the items that were in the ordinance and asked us to consider that. We had not had a chance to have a follow-up meeting with them by the time council heard the introduction. Since that time, there's been at least two, if not three, meetings with the stakeholders, representatives from the massage establishments. As a result of that, we are recommending a few modifications to what was brought to you, and I think those have been outlined in the memo. And as a result of those changes, we are suggesting, recommending to the council to reintroduce that ordinance, and that is in 6D. But then we would need to then, what we'd recommend is we would delete 7A.
In reality, what we're doing is that we're removing the ordinance that was introduced before.
Correct.
And we are replacing it with a new ordinance, which the differences between the new ordinance and the old ordinances is not material, but it's significant enough with these house cleaning items.
Correct.
That we need to reintroduce.
Correct. Reintroduce on item 6D.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the staff's ability to meet with representatives of the industry. I think the changes proposed in 6D are positive changes, and I certainly would support introducing the newer version of this ordinance versus 7A. So I support the staff's recommendations.
Okay. Any other questions?
So, Mayor, we would seek direction here to put 6D on consent. That's on page 5.
Any items or any issues with that? Okay, 6D will go on consent unless there's...
And then and then on page 6, Mayor, we will...
Yeah, let's just go ahead to 6.
7A.
Oh, we just remove 7A from the
correct.
Agenda?
Delete 7A then.
So we're deleting 7A from the agenda, and 6D will be on consent.
Which is an introduction.
Which is an introduction of the revised ordinance.
There you go.
Yeah, Councilmember?
May I have another question on page 5, item 6C? I know that's introduction of the ordinance, but it might be misleading to have it on consent since that was a 4-3 split on the council in our study session.
So you would like that removed?
I would like that removed.
Okay, so 6C is off consent.
Oh, that's introduction?
That's introduction. Okay, so 6C is off consent, 6D is on consent, and 7A on page 6 is deleted. Any other items on page 6?
Yes, Mayor.
Oh, Mr. Wesley. You're on page 6.
Yes, on page 6, with item 7B, it's case Z0917. When that was introduced a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately, when we put together that ordinance, we pulled in an earlier draft of that ordinance, and so the ordinance that was introduced a couple of weeks isn't quite correct. So we're reintroducing tonight item 6E, the correct ordinance for 0917. And so we can delete 7B from the agenda. We've talked to the applicant, and they're okay with
that. Okay, so item 7B will be deleted, and we have 6C. In other words, this is a technical issue.
Right.
And we would then put 6E on consent, Mayor, if that's the agreement of the council.
Any problems with putting 6E on consent? Okay, does everyone understand? That's merely a technical. There's no changes other than the paperwork wasn't quite in order. Okay, anything else on page 6? I guess we beat that one to death, didn't we? Page 7. Okay. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss Tucson's water harvesting and gray water ordinances. Councilmember Richens.
Thank you. Councilmember Rodney Glassman from Tucson is here with us. I was really intrigued by what Tucson's done here as far as I find it very innovative, the water harvesting and gray water ordinances that they've passed. They're starting to become a national model in this area. I also had a staff member that worked for me at my professional job named Emily Brott, who helped assist with this process too, and so I have become very familiar with it. But we have today Councilmember Rodney Glassman to present to us what Tucson has did as kind of an instruction for what's possible. Rodney.
Thank you, Councilman, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Thank you for inviting us up from Tucson today. We're glad to be here to run through a brief PowerPoint presentation on some of the accomplishments that the city of Tucson was able to do in regards to water conservation. My background, I have a PhD in arid land resource sciences from the University of Arizona. And prior to getting elected to the council, I had spent 4 years working for both Congressman Raul Grijalva on his legislative staff and the president of KB Home down in Tucson. So I spent 4 years working for the largest home builder in our community while working for one of the most active members, environmental members of the U.S. House of Representatives. So when we got elected, we were really able to get everyone around the table together because of those relationships. And that was one of the reasons I think we were successful in Tucson. And so we enjoy sharing what we were able to accomplish. As you all know, water and water conservation and water sustainability truly are becoming national and international issues. Whether it be in Arizona and Tucson or around the world, water is of premier importance, and communities and countries and states are continuing to focus on what we can do to provide a more sustainable water supply. But as you also know, change begins at home, which is why the city of Tucson is always interested in educating other communities on what we're doing and learning from other communities as well. It's hard to find new water supplies. This graph that we have up here is a sample of the city of Tucson and our water plan. The area I'd like to highlight, and hopefully you can see it, is the checked blue area right below the pink, where you can see our water supply and our pink demand separate. Starting about 2017, if the city of Tucson continues to grow at the rate it is growing now, we will need additional water supplies. And as you know, those additional water supplies are expensive. Right now, our water supplies include the Colorado River, mined groundwater, reclaimed water, incremental ground recharge. But we are looking, as most communities in this state are, for that next bucket of water. And because we're looking for that next bucket of water, we thought that this would be an area that we would like to continue to focus on. Drought and climate change are here throughout the state, as you know, especially in southern Arizona, northern Arizona, all different regions. This is our 2009 long-term drought status map, and it continues to get worse. Why is Tucson the first to do this in the country? It comes down a lot to the simple issue of geography, because as a state, we sit at the bottom of the Colorado River. Nevada, California, they get to drink before we ever get to. But it gets a little worse down in Tucson because we also sit at the bottom of the Central Arizona Project. The city of Tucson actually is the largest municipal customer of Central Arizona Project water. And so when it comes to conservation, we have the ultimate incentive not only to do it ourselves, but to get those north of us to participate as well, because the more that's left in the system, the better chance we're going to have more to drink. Now, historically in the state of Arizona, most communities have treated rainwater as wastewater. In fact, the ordinances that we have, our land use codes, require that developers take that water and either capture it in basins or get it off their property. What this leads to is it leads to tremendous amounts of money being spent on stormwater management. It leads to urban street flooding if the infrastructure isn't there, flashy, floody peaks, and also stormwater quality issues. Most communities also have stormwater quality boards where we're spending money, spending staff time, spending resources, trying to make sure that water pollution is not becoming an issue. Now, in the city of Tucson, we've used this lack of planning to our advantage. And I share this with you, but I respectfully request that you all do not. I know you like to take our spring training teams, but I urge you not to take this particular idea.
That's not us. That's other people.
So far. So anyway, actually, I don't know if we have any left. But a different subject. Before I got elected, Scott, Mr. Mayor, the issue that we've been able to come up with in Tucson is the issue of tourism. We've been able to take tourism and to leverage that rainwater and our lack of planning on how we deal with stormwater to come up with a new sport that we urge you not to steal, and that is called urban kayaking. What we're able to do is we're able to take the flooding from our streets and invite people to use those flooded streets to do some wonderful recreational activities. But in all seriousness, there's five great things about rainwater harvesting, rainwater. Number one, there's a lot of it. In fact, the city of Tucson receives more rainfall every year than we actually utilize water as a community. So theoretically, we could capture it all. We'd be in a great position. Because number two, rainwater's free, which you all know. And while municipalities are going to continue to increase the cost of water, it will always be free from the sky. Knock on wood. Number three, it falls where you need it. It's important because if you plan your developments that you're building today for the future and you want to steer that water, you can actually get it right where it needs to go without the use of irrigation systems, without the use of canals, without any additional infrastructure. It's called passive rainwater harvesting. It comes off your rooftops, comes off your parking lot, and doesn't cost anything. It just requires a little bit of forethought. Plants like rainwater. It's low in salt and high in nitrogen, and most importantly, from the developer's perspective, if we harvest it, we can stop spending money trying to get rid of it. Another great thing about rainwater is that it's a great and cost-effective alternative to other water sources. As you know, desalinizing brackish groundwater costs about $300 per acre foot. The Central Arizona Project costs $4 billion to build and over $100 per acre foot to supply that water. But what's most important for municipalities is that only 2/3 of the Native American tribes in the state of Arizona have actually had their water rights adjudicated. And through the Winters Doctrine, which, in case you didn't go to law school, which unfortunately I did, the Winters Doctrine pretty much says that Native American tribes are eligible for every practicably irrigable acre of land that they would like to irrigate. Meaning is they go to the courts and they try to adjudicate their water rights. The Central Arizona Project is actually probably going to be deprived of another 1/3 to 1/2 of the water that's running through the system as those Native American tribes get the water rights that are theirs. Additionally, when it comes to desalinization, something very popular that you've probably been reading about in magazines, it costs over $1,000 an acre foot. So we focused on rainwater harvesting, which is intercepting stormwater from a roof, driveway, soil, or other surface and putting it to beneficial use. Now, the city of Tucson started early, actually over 15 years ago, by putting together a land use code since the mid-1990s, which was a qualitative requirement, a.k.a. the city of Tucson recommends. The way I got involved in this issue is I was working at KB, and I tried to utilize that rainwater harvesting manual on an actual project. And I went in, and what city staff said was, well, you're going to have to apply for this exception, this exception, this exception, because while we recommend it, it's the exception rather than the rule. And that, to me, didn't make a lot of sense because when it comes to water conservation, it should be the rule rather than the exception, especially
I guarantee that would never happen in the city of Mesa.
True.
Good point.
But hypothetically speaking, in case it does. There's lots of ways to do rainwater harvesting, and I'll run through these really quickly because I'm sure you've heard of most of them. There's microbasins, which is a small-scale technique which catches water from localized catchment areas, and there's an example of it. There's swales, which catches water from the broader landscaping. They're built on a land contour. They have a snaky shape, and they're usually in multi-layers, so it's designed for overflow. There's infiltration basins, which are popular in large-scale projects. They also make great recreational areas so that they have a great double use. And then there's the French drain, which I actually learned about from a sixth grader at one of our local elementary schools. And you can bury these. It's a rock-filled trench, provides even walking surface, and the water just fills up the pores along the way. More popular and large-scale used techniques is curb cutouts. So often on lots of projects, I was in Avondale about a month ago visiting with Mayor Marie and her mayor and council, and we looked out the window because they said, how do you do this rainwater stuff? And we looked at their brand new city hall that they just built a couple years ago, and we looked at their streets, and on the other side of their curbs were rows of trees that they're irrigating with drinking water because they didn't have simple curb cutouts to just let that rainwater go and to water those native species that they have there that only need the natural and annual rainwater fall. So it's a real simple thing if you do it at the time of construction. And lastly, porous pavement, which is one of the newer technologies. I also like to throw in the mother of all symbols for rainwater harvesting. It's the cistern. But as you can see right here, a couple different examples. There's the hidden one top right. Top left, you have one that's nicely decorated. Bottom right, you're looking at something that was actually part of the original home design. So if it's done at the time of construction, you can incorporate it into the design. And lastly, bottom left, those are my favorite because those are buried tanks. The irony is there are tremendous numbers of developments throughout the state of Arizona right now that have buried tanks. But in most municipalities, one of the requirements is that we perforate the bottom of those tanks to make sure that the water goes down instead of up because we don't want to have to deal with the water later on. Ironic. And then we take drinking water and use it for vegetation once again. Our commitment when we ran for office was to require rainwater harvesting on all new commercial development, but we did it in a special way. When I ran for city council, I only accepted $20 contributions. So when I got elected, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, the president of the Home Builders Association, our community's largest developer, as well as the president of the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, and Congressman Grijalva were all my largest contributors. So when I said, you all get an equal seat at the table, they believed me because they had each paid for it. We built consensus, and we did it in a number of ways. We made a motion at the mayor and council to create a stakeholder group. The stakeholder group was made up of these business organizations, the chamber, the realtors, the home builders, all the way across the board to the Sierra Club, the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union. I see some of our labor brethren here today, all sitting around the table together, working together, 14 members with a professional facilitator. We assembled the public representatives. We developed the ordinance. We adopted the ordinance. And it was spectacular because it was unanimous. Everyone from that stakeholder committee came out together, focused on it together, because they had built partnerships and relationships along the way. And then before we passed it, we lined up some pilot studies. Pilot studies that included Quick Trip. You have them up here, one of the best donut places and cleanest bathrooms in town. Quick Trip, we have banks, we have a restaurant, we have all different kinds of businesses that agreed to be pilot programs, and we adopted the ordinance. It's the first of its kind in the nation that quantifies commercial water use. 20 organizations spoke out in favor of it, and Mayor Smith knows our mayor walk-up down in Tucson. He's been the mayor for over 8 years now. He's coming on 12, and he said it was the best public hearing he'd ever attended. Hell of a quote from a hell of a mayor. The main components of the ordinance, it applies to new commercial only, sets the bar for new commercial development. Here's what's interesting. We require that new development get 50% of their landscape water needs from rainwater harvesting. Why 50%? Because there was that stakeholder group that no elected officials were a part of, and they went in a room for 9 months, and some of the people wanted 100%, some of the people wanted zero, and they worked together and they worked together, and what they found out was that at the 50% mark, you could do it with passive rainwater harvesting, meaning curb cutouts, designing your property correctly, making sure that instead of planting your trees on berms like this, you planted them in the bottom like this. Those little things right there, nothing else. No extra infrastructure, no extra cost. It didn't cost any money. It requires a water harvesting plan and water budget, 3 years to establish the plants, because obviously in a lot of these commercial developments, the plants are one of the largest investments that you're making in a commercial development. So we wanted to make sure there were protections so that those plants didn't get lost in the case of drought, or in case they didn't get their roots in deep enough. Soil moisture-based irrigation controls, relief, and this part's important, relief from the 50% requirement in the case of drought, because we're going to have that from time to time, and we don't want developers losing their plants because it's a big investment, and an annual report. Some misconceptions we had to deal with along the way. Water harvesting recharges the aquifer. The fact is that when the aquifer is below 250 feet below the surface, you're not actually recharging the aquifer at all because that water is not meeting the aquifer. Why harvest rainwater when it rarely rains? As you saw earlier, harvesting maximizes the water that we do get. In Tucson, we get 10 to 12 inches a year. But that's enough to water everything we need. Water harvesting breeds mosquitoes. Just not true if you infiltrate the water into the soil within 24 hours to prevent breeding. Right now, you have ordinances that don't allow for standing water. So we're not asking them to do anything that's different. You must use tanks to harvest rainwater, and I don't like the looks of tanks. That was another thing we got. You've seen from the pictures, you've seen from the information we provided, rainwater harvesting is easy, and the cheapest way to do it actually doesn't even involve tanks. You don't need any infrastructure at all. You just need the forethought when you're designing your property. And in Tucson, we have a lot of appreciation for our washes, and some were concerned that it would deprive the washes of water. The fact is that wasn't an issue. So the lessons that we learned, rainwater harvesting, were simple. Use demand-driven requirements, not supply. When I campaigned, I talked about capturing 100% of what fell on the property. It didn't make any sense. Even the environmentalists said, we don't need 100% of what falls because we can't even use 100% of what falls. Provide the implementation details before adoption for support. The key with that was getting the information out ahead of time so that people could get excited because they knew what we were actually voting on. It wasn't just a concept, it was a reality. Start with the outdoor requirements for simplicity. That's another thing that we did in the city of Tucson. We used to just have 1 meter per property. Now we have two so that you can actually keep track of the outside water use separate. Encourage the use of native plants and know your surface water rights because different communities have different water rights that sometimes require that the user put that water back into the system, but hopefully that's not the case right here in Mesa. Real quickly, I'll run you through the gray water. Some people are interested in one, some the other, so I'll be quick. Gray water was the other campaign commitment that we made because 40% of the water that comes from the average home, 40% of the water that's used on the average home is for landscaping. 40%. Now, we already showed you how to cut your commercial use by 50%. 40%. And by using gray water, which is the water diverted from washing machines, bathtubs, showers, and lavatory sinks, you can reuse that water. Now, Arizona started early on the issue of gray water with a strong grassroots movement. In fact, in January of 2001, the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality actually wrote a manual on gray water. So it's something that everyone around the state should know about, should be able to use, and you can see an example of it here. Our commitment was to stub out residential gray water plumbing. If any of you have ever built a home before, what you would remember is you would remember picking where you were going to put your ceiling fans, picking where you were going to put your alarm, maybe where you were going to stub out for your cable system. This ordinance does nothing more than that. What we do is we stub out the gray water system because the pipes need to be in the wall today. Otherwise, just like trying to put your alarm system in after the fact, you're going to have wires running everywhere. Imagine pipes running everywhere in your house because you want to use gray water. But it might not be you that uses the gray water, because the homes we build today are going to be around for 20, 30, 40 years from now. And we can all agree that there's going to be less water in Arizona 30, 40 years from now than there are today. So we're buying that sustainability. The ordinance adoption was simple. It was residentially focused because of the large potential to irrigate from gray water because of that 40% that's used for landscaping. The plumbing should be done at the time of construction, which is why we wanted a pre-plumbing ordinance. It costs about $250 a house for the plumbing. That's it. This does not require people to put in a system. Systems cost thousands of dollars. I believe that conservation should be right in the hands of the homeowner. They should make that choice. Main components, new single family and duplexes, separate stub outs for washers. We were just having coffee across the way with the former mayor of Scottsdale, who now runs the Audubon Society, and she uses her rainwater harvesting her gray water plumbing to water her garden. And she does it without a pump or without a system, simply runs off the washing machine because she uses biodegradable soap. So it's a great way to reuse a lot of your water without having to do anything funky. It can drain from lavatory, showers, bathtubs. We provide the stub outs, and we provide it user ready. So what's happened is there are now companies in town that are interested in sitting in these systems. So we're creating a little cottage industry already. Some misconceptions really quickly. Odors are always a problem. It's just not the case. You distribute the water to multiple points, and you use mulch to infiltrate fast and prevent odor, just like any backyard. Can't eat food from gray water supplied gardens. Just like anything that you would grow in your garden, you want to make sure that you wash it. And that's pretty much what the rule is with gray water. You just want to wash your food before you grow it. Another concern from some of our very committed developers that wanted to make sure that we were going to get all that water running through our sewer system was that gray water use conservation would deprive the sewer system. Strangely enough, we have found no city in the country that has had this problem. So if you conserve a little bit, you'll still have plenty to flood or to wash out your sewer system if you run your own sewer system. Gray water is bad for the soil. It's just not true. To maintain good soil health, you just use the appropriate products. You want to keep your salts low and your sodium low by diluting it, with that rainwater and gray water. And then lastly, gray water is unhealthy. The fact is, the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality has said that it is approved for use. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for sustainability. The lessons that we learned with gray water plumbing: keep the ordinance simple and flexible so it is adaptable to future technologies. All our ordinance does is plumb. We put pipes in and they go to the wall. So as technology changes, so too can the gray water systems that the homeowners purchase change. The one thing that isn't going to change is the fact that the water needs to get to the wall from the sink. And that's what we put in place. get a variety of technical input from grassroots to professional. Tucson, because we've been involved in conservation efforts for a long time, has a number of individuals that truly are experts in the area, and we brought them around the table with the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union, with large-scale developers, to figure out how to make this something that was user-friendly, which is why the Southern Arizona Home Builders, when it came time for the vote, actually came out and they did not oppose it. They did not oppose it because they knew that it was in the best interest of building homes in the community, because the more sustainable that you can make new homes, the more homes you're going to be allowed to build, and you're going to use less water doing it. We involved the Wastewater Management Agency in our jurisdiction. In our case, we supply the water at the city of Tucson. Pima County collects it. So we wanted to make sure that they had a seat at the table. And lastly, we worked out the details of implementation before adopting the ordinance to help garner support. We did that with both rainwater and graywater. We passed these ordinances a year and a half ago. They don't go into effect until June of 2010. Why? Because I come from the development industry, and I know that it takes a long time to plan, price, implement, and then put something in place. And so we were very respectful to the development community and said, you're going to have plenty of time, a nice length of time, to be able to implement these decisions so that it doesn't become onerous, it doesn't become impossible. And we're in a great position right now because, as you know, the state legislature has put a moratorium on cities and towns creating new ordinances that go into effect immediately because of the economic downturn. Which means if your mayor and council in the next few months decided to move forward on a graywater or rainwater ordinance, you actually would have the same implementation time period as the city of Tucson. They've done it legislatively for you by tying your hands, but the fact is that you'd still be able to do that. So it puts you in a great position. Our next steps, we're conducting water harvesting and graywater pilot studies throughout the city of Tucson. We're adjusting other city codes to be compatible with these new requirements. We're preparing for unintended consequences. Anytime one of our pilot projects goes forward, they work with development services, they work with our Office of Conservation and Sustainable Development to make sure that this thing's working so we can tweak it if it doesn't. We're educating staff and the public on new ordinances, and we're communicating regionally to share our experiences and lessons, which is why I'm very glad to be here today with all of you to share this idea, because if you try it, if you try something similar, you're going to learn things, we're going to learn things, we're going to be able to conserve more together, because when it comes to water conservation, we're all in it together as a state. We have a bright future. I believe that we could develop Arizona as the go-to source for water harvesting and gray water systems as far as technologies. We can build cottage industries. My brother just graduated with his MBA from the University of Arizona, and one of the group projects that they had is they're starting a company that takes those cinder block walls that a lot of the residential developers use, and they're actually building tanks that look like those walls out of cisterns. So you can have a wall and a cistern that's a tank to help utilize rainwater harvesting, graywater plumbing. So there really is a lot that can happen. It's good for business. It's a great potential growth industry. In the city of Tucson, we committed to require rainwater harvesting. We committed to adopt a residential graywater plumbing ordinance. We also adopted a dedicated funding source for water conservation, so we're actually providing incentives for our pilot programs to cover some of their costs to make sure that they can move forward in a strong way. We changed our landscaping requirement to one tree per four parking spaces because we're going to be revegetating to work on that heat island effect, because now developers are excited because it isn't going to cost them more to have more trees. It's going to cost them less because of rainwater harvesting. And in 2009, we were the recipient of the Region 9 Environmental Protection Agency Award for Environmental Achievement. So it's got to be good. The federal government likes it. In a nutshell and in summary, and then I'll take your questions, this is the home that I visited during my campaign. It's a home of a fellow named Brad Lancaster. Brad Lancaster is a long-term environmentalist. Brad Lancaster, in this house, don't let those wires deceive you. This is the only house I've ever been to in the city that is not connected to our power grid, and it's not connected to our water grid. This fellow uses no utilities. He bought this house 10 years ago. For those of you that were involved in scouting, he's an Eagle Scout. That's what got me all excited, because I'm an Eagle Scout as well. And during our tour, we talked about it. He could not find a single municipality to try to implement this. Rainwater, conservation, makes sense. This is his home 10 years ago when he bought it, and utilizing just passive rainwater harvesting, meaning no tanks, no pumps, passive rainwater harvesting, this is his home today. The stuff works. Rainwater harvesting and graywater plumbing work. It's good for the long term of our community, because water conservation isn't a Republican issue, it isn't a Democratic issue, it's not a business issue or an environmental issue. Everyone I know loves drinking water. And so using it on our plants doesn't make much sense when we can capture it from the sky and we can reutilize it from our bathtubs. So in closing, we brought some gifts. Katie?
Come on up.
In addition to the lovely green bags, we brought with us today.
Thank you.
Two binders. One for the councilman who invited us, he can share it with the mayor, and another for your city manager. Where are you, city manager? There you are. Frankly, for your city attorney, because what we brought copies of our ordinances, we brought the language from our stakeholder meetings, and then most importantly, in each of these binders is a DVD, which has the language on disk digitally. So if there's anything that you like about the ordinances or the presentation you heard today, your city staff can take it, tweak it, look at it, send it to stakeholder groups, do whatever it takes. But we urge you to join the city of Tucson in water conservation. It's a great thing. So thank you.
Councilmember, thank you so very much. Any questions right now? We're short on time, so I've got gobs of questions, but way too much for right now, so we'll follow up with that. Thank you so very much. We really appreciate it. Very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, you know, before we go, I've been noted that we'd like to recognize, there stood up just on cue, Cecil. Representative Cecil Lash, thanks for visiting us, Representative. Asha, representative from District 18, Legislative District 18. Thank you for being here, Cecil. Next item is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees.
So moved.
Have a motion from Councilmember Summers, second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended.
A little travel.
We went travel. We'll talk about that on Thursday, okay? And Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just on meeting schedules, first of all, just a reminder that this Tuesday, the 17th, there's another Building Stronger Neighborhoods kickoff for District 4, and that'll be at Lincoln Elementary School. So invite everyone out to that. That starts at 6:30 p.m. And we do have a study session this Thursday, November 19th at 7:30 a.m. We will not meet on Thanksgiving Day, so we'll have a break that day. And just as far as items coming up in the future, again, we have Dennis, Councilman Kavanaugh has a District 3 pancake breakfast on December 5th at the Fire Station 207. We also want to remind, let the council know that we will be having a joint meeting with the Town of Gilbert, their council, on Tuesday, December 8th. And that will be out at the ASU Polytechnic Ballroom, and we'll get you more information about that, but that's on a Tuesday evening, December 8th, so that's been confirmed to have the councils come together for that. And then one last item we want to recognize, and Pete, are you here? I didn't see Pete. Is Pete here? Brian, is he here?
No.
Oh, you must have known we were going to recognize him. Okay, we'll have to figure out a way to get him here. We want to recognize.
Wait. We got to cajole the guy to get here to be recognized.
I think he didn't have anything on the agenda, so he probably didn't show up today. So he may not have known. So anyway, we want to we need to recognize Pete for a significant accomplishment. We'll do that at a later time.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I would just like to take this opportunity to remind everybody that this Saturday, since I'm going to miss Thursday's meeting, I'm going to be out of town in Washington, but this Saturday, 2:30, Symphony of the Southwest, Tubby the Tuba.
There you go.
A guest narrator.
No, I'm not playing the role of Tubby, even though I would definitely fit in that. Now, most people, when I say this, they have a blank look on their face like they don't know what Tubby the Tuba is. And I ask you, most people grew up with Peter and the Wolf, right? Most of you ever heard of Peter and the Wolf? Well, when that record that you played Peter and the Wolf, if you would have turned it over, you would have probably heard Tubby the Tuba. It's a nice little thing that an artist wrote for his child to introduce her to the orchestra. So the Symphony of the Southwest has asked me to narrate that, since unfortunately I mentioned that I had grown up on Tubby the Tuba, and the conductor believed that meant that I would narrate Tubby the Tuba. So I'm narrating Tubby the Tuba, and I'm proud to do it, and supporting one of our local symphonies, and come and laugh at the mayor. Or laugh with, or cry with me, or cry at me, whatever you want to do. Saturday at 2:30. So thank you. And just quickly, yes?
What's a record?
What's a record?
a vinyl disc.
Came before 8-tracks.
Yeah,
that's right. It came before 8-tracks and cassettes.
That's right.
Thank you, Councilmember.
You are on your game.
Legends.
I'm speechless. I have no idea what to say. And so we will, if there's nothing else to say.
Second.
Got a motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
We'll meet you upstairs in 7 minutes. Thank you.